became indignant with you there.
Look,
I like that. Sterling, he's only going to put up with so much.
Look, the job of condescending to me has already been filled today by the man known as Bill Vickery. So
you have to wait till Monday,
Mr.
Sterling. You can't imagine the level of smugness that's at the end of this table between Justin.
In fact, you can get your smug fried, blackened, or however you like it on a taco today.
Swimming in a pool of smugness.
Chicken, beef, fish, or smug tacos today at the Rev Room.
I can't deal with y'all on that one right there. Y'all in a class by yourself on that one right there, guys.
Well, I adore you, Sterling, and I think you make some valid points, but I just can't go there. But he is a great coach. And you want to talk about a guy that's had an impact on a lot of other coaches. He is a good one.
Coaching tree.
Suzanne will be joining us here in mere moments. She's settling in. She's been running around all morning to make sure that the smug tacos will be ready on time for the opening of the Rev Room today. They do have lunch Tuesday through Sunday. No lunch on Monday. Am I correct? Did I read that sign correctly?
Closed
on Monday altogether. But they do have the Beatles brunch on Saturday and Sunday?
Just Sunday.
The Pigskin Preacher will be here later today. I'm going to buy him a couple of tacos, and he is Mr. Beatles. He is my favorite Beatles aficionado.
Yes.
And so I'll get his we'll have to tell him to come back on Sunday.
What do you have to do
Sunday
to be an aficionado? How do you get that? How does that designate?
Same way you become
about
a Civil War buff.
A buff. There we go.
This
just ripping
to be
off,
a buff.
Ripping off Larry David now.
Yeah. Exactly. Is there anybody better? Have you seen the previews for his new show, by the way?
No.
It's got John Hamm is in it. It's a star-studded cast. It looks really good. It's a new show on HBO.
He did a thing with Jerry Seinfeld. Seinfeld has a little thing on Sparkle and YouTube now called Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
I watched the whole first season.
Oh, my gosh, it's brilliant.
Did you see the one with
Sparkle, whatever these things
are. What about
Pop? I don't know. Snapchat?
Did you see the one he did with Michael Richards?
Yes, I thought.
Poor Michael Richards. Boy, you want to talk about just absolutely falling on a grenade that you in fact pulled the pin on.
He's not a stand-up guy and should have known better.
He's not a stand-up guy anymore the way he's
exactly, as it turns out.
Robbie Nicewanger, on the other hand, from the Arkansas News Bureau, is a stand-up guy. In fact, he's the very definition. How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good, my man. So, hey, look, summer's over, bro, so get back to work. It's on now, okay?
Media Days. You know what? The beauty of this being so early is that, you know, there's a couple of weeks before spring practice, before preseason practice starts, so I'm going to slip away for a few more days at the end of the month. So,
I understand Arkansas Media Day is on a Sunday this year.
Is it really?
That's what I was told.
Yes. Okay. That's in honor of the Sunday buzz.
I haven't gotten all those dates yet, so I wouldn't rule anything out at this point.
I was told it was going to be on August, 11th, maybe.
Okay.
Anyway, right. So give me some of your takeaways from SEC Media Days. Give me some of your winners, some of your guys who didn't perform quite so well, whether you're talking coaches or players, significant items to come out from an informational standpoint, interesting items you thought from an opinion standpoint from some of the coaches or players. Just give me kind of your overview, having spent some time there.
Yeah, I think the first thing that stands out, you know, because we're in the state, you know, the big topic was Brett Bielema, and obviously he made some waves there with his really kind of passionate defense of, you know, what he believes, you know, about no huddle offenses and how they can be dangerous for players on both sides of the ball. Clearly, he got pretty fired up, I think, when he was told that Gus Malzahn's first reaction, you know, that there's a thought that people could get injured was that it's got to be a joke. And you could see he kind of was taken aback when he heard the word joke. You know, I don't know if he really understood that Gus wasn't necessarily, you know, pointing the finger at him necessarily. But it was very, very interesting to sit there and hear that from him. I haven't heard that from him yet since, you know, we've gotten to know him here the last few months. You could just really kind of tell the passion. And, you know, then we went around and asked the players about it, and he said, yeah, he's a really passionate guy. You know, he's got a lot of jokes. We know that. He's funny. He's a guy's guy. But, you know, when he's really, really, you know, feels passionate about something, he's going to express it. And I think that's what we saw there. So that was the first takeaway. And then, you know, the rest of it, man, it's really just a circus. And you saw that with the Johnny Manziel situation. It was kind of a perfect storm with him missing the or going off the Manning camp over the weekend. And then, you know, a couple days later, there he is in Hoover. So you knew that was going to be a gigantic circus, and it certainly was. But, you know, I will say this. I don't think we know the complete and true and full story about what happened there with Johnny Manziel, but I thought he handled himself well in the spotlight. When was it? On Wednesday, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think, you know, in some situations or some portions of the discussion, people are being a little bit too hard and unreasonable about expectations of a 20-year-old. At the same time, though, I mean, he is not your average 20-year-old, and he's not going to be allowed to be until he's – and he's really never going to be an average guy because he's going to move on and play in the NFL after this.
I liken it to the Tim Tebow situation. The thing is, when you're talking about personalities and who these people are, Tim Tebow and Johnny Manziel are the complete opposite end of the spectrum. Tim Tebow's going to get the media crush, but, you know, he's never done anything that will really kind of get him talked about, if that makes sense, you know, off the field. Johnny Manziel has. So, and I think he even said it, you know, on Wednesday, listen, I'm not Tim Tebow. We're different personalities, and that's true. And that's why I think you're really seeing this social media age, and you're really seeing the spotlight shine really, really hard on a kid like that.
We make excuses for people because they're 19 or 20 or 21 years old all the time. I mean, there's a 20-year-old that gets inside the gunner seat of a Humvee in Afghanistan.
We don't expect that's it. A Tommy Smith argument. I don't know about all that.
Well, what's the difference?
He's a 20-year-old college student who's having a beer. He shouldn't have had a beer at the Manning camp, admittedly, but what has he done that any other 20-year-old in his position wouldn't do? He's got a father who has some means, right, and he's been doing things that his father can afford to allow him to do in the same way that I would do it if my dad could afford to take me to NBA games and take me to play Pebble Beach when I was in college.
Nothing
I
wrong
done,
with that.
No, that's all I'm saying.
Wrong with that.
Yeah, I don't think he's done anything wrong whatsoever other than the fact that he missed a meeting because he did pull a stupid stunt and went out and party too late.
To me, that's
a reasonable expectation of a 20-year-old in college.
Yeah, Kevin Sumlin, you know, said, listen, he's made mistakes. And you know, I think even Johnny, you know, I don't know if he came out and said, you know, yes, I've made mistakes, but he knows it too. You know, there are some things you can and can't do. Now, you know, some of the stuff, like, you know, all the intense scrutiny he gets for being at a basketball game or something like that, that's almost in a way unfair, you know, but that's the way it's come. But, yeah, when you're in a position like that, every little thing you do, whether it's good, bad, indifferent, doesn't matter, you know, making mistakes or just, you know, living your life, it's going to really kind of blow up on you, and that's what he's had to learn in the off season, and he's got to learn how to deal with it, and I think he's dealing with it.
We're going to see how smart he is. Because that to me, that's going to be a measure of his intelligence and his ability to adapt. And if I'm an NFL GM, that's one of the things I'm going to look at, because the bottom line is he's had ample opportunities now to learn. You're not average, and everything you do is going to be blown out of proportion, whether it's a tweet, how you park your car, what you do in public, what you do at home. I mean, it's all going to be blown out of proportion. Can you handle it? Because you're going to be under the same kind of scrutiny when you play for my NFL team.
And the best thing for Kevin Sumlin and Texas A&M and even Johnny Manziel is that the offseason is ending very soon. So it's going to be back in the preseason camp, back into the flow of things. And then, you know, we're going to see if this has had any effect on him at all on the field. And, you know, he was asked about that down there as well. You know, you realize that if you have a season that's not quite up to expectations, they're going to look at this offseason and say, this is the reason. He said, I'm fine with that. I've got to be okay with it. You know, it is what it is. So we'll see what happens on the field.
I think the unfair criticism is going to come because I think the fall is there waiting to happen, only because you lose three offensive linemen, you lose those running backs. I mean, that's more important than whether or not he gets kicked out of the Manning camp, which, by the way, it was a spectacularly stupid thing to do to begin with. So let's call that what it was.
I give you that.
But replace those offensive linemen, replace that running game, and now have defenses who are going to be 100% designed to either keep you in the pocket and force you to throw the ball down the field, not going to let you scramble, they're going to put a spy on you, they're going to do all those things. I just think it's set up for him to have a subpar year, and then the criticism is going to come. That's where I think maybe it's going to be a little bit unfair.
So the defensive coordinators in this league have definitely had another several months to prepare for this guy. I mean, let's be honest, the numbers he put up last year, those are ridiculous. It's going to be hard to put up the same kinds of numbers again. So he's in a tough spot because if he doesn't, you know, put up those same exact numbers, he's going to be like, the partying, it did it in the offseason. That's why he's not as good as he was last year.
And the thing is, and you know this too, Robbie, and certainly Bill, you understand this too. I mean, this is a bit of a farce. I mean, the SEC Media Days, it is more about, you know, BS than substance in most cases. However, we're about, when you get to a practical standpoint and you talk about the things you just mentioned with the offensive line, you know, now he still has a very good running back behind him and he's got some weapons. But, you know, the other thing we haven't talked about is how much does an impact does Kingsbury's departure have?
Yeah.
I'm sure their rapport was very good because Kingsbury is basically
Ryan Gosling.
He's a 20-year-old guy. I mean, he's got. You want to talk about a guy who's got great rapport with a young player? Not to say that Kevin Sumlin doesn't, but I don't know who is more responsible for play design. I don't know who is more responsible for play-by-play calling. I mean, I don't know who's more responsible for that kind of thing. Now, again, a lot of improvisation going on over there with Johnny Football, but those are practical things that we're going to see bear themselves out. And I think you make a valid point.
I just think
it's going to be almost impossible to get anywhere close to what he did last year. And when he doesn't, you're right. I mean, he's going to catch.
They are ripe for a fall this year.
You know what? Maybe next year.
I mean,
next year it'll be him saying, "My fans are the rudest in the SEC," just like James Franklin did for Missouri this year.
And that's another example of things that can be taken totally out of context there. He wasn't, from what I understood, he wasn't pointing out Missouri fans saying they're terrible or horrible. He was just, I think the question that was asked him was, what have fans been like, or who's been the rudest? And he said, actually, last year there was a couple of Missouri fans that were pretty rude to me, and it became all of Missouri fans are rude to him.
Yeah, we played the clip yesterday. He went pretty in-depth. I mean, like I said yesterday on the air, and I won't go into it again, but the bottom line is you can say any of 13 teams, you just can't say yours.
Yeah.
The obvious answer is A&M because that's a school you know best.
Right.
You came in from the Big 12 of them. I mean, it's not really a rivalry, but, I mean, that's a natural answer to me.
I'm okay with it because, we want honesty from these guys, and so, they give us honesty, and I don't want to crucify them for the honesty then,
You're right.
If the Missouri fan was the rudest to him last year, hey, tell us, and we'll appreciate that and move on.
Because I'm not upset at Johnny Manziel for oversleeping. I'm upset at him for giving me the dog eat my homework excuse of my phone died. 21 kids' phones don't die.
No,
does any kid go out of town without his phone charger? And, oh, by the way, you can get a phone charger for any phone at Radio Shack.
No, that's that thing.
Although in Thibodaux, Louisiana, there probably isn't a Radio Shack, admittedly.
Ah, wow, boy, kind of bagging on
Have you ever
Thibodaux?
Been?
I've never been.
Yeah.
I've never been to Lac-Saint-Jean Parish.
You've been to Lebanon? I mean, it's about as easy
I've
to get
to
in.
Beirut, yes.
Yeah, it's hard to get in there. I mean, I'm just saying. So
I want to ask Robbie, how great is it when Les Miles sets down behind a microphone? Because at that point you can just hit a golf ball in a tile bathroom because it's going any which way it can.
Fantastic. I mean, it's just outstanding. I mean, it's almost like, listen, Steve Spurrier was great. Brett Bielema was great. But, to close the day or to close the 3 days with Les Miles, it's always something special. So, and he was fantastic again yesterday. He just has you laughing. And, the best part, I think, was just the fact that all of a sudden he couldn't hear questions. And, he talked about earlier how he didn't understand Australian. He probably doesn't understand English either. I think he speaks Martian, probably.
Yeah.
So, he was just fantastic yesterday.
He's so goofy. And he's hilarious. I like the guy. I certainly don't ever root for his team, but I do like the guy. And if you're an LSU fan, I mean, the guy's crazy like a fox. I can't figure out how he does or what he does, but he does it better than anybody else.
Yeah, and he wins a heck of a lot of ball games. What is he, something like, 80 and 20, I think, maybe around there in his career at LSU. That's And I realized that the foundation really was laid, with Nick Saban. But, they've maintained success pretty good now. Have they won the amount of championships LSU fans want? No. But they are winning 10, 11 games on a regular basis. And so, you've got to give him some credit for that, I think. No matter how goofy, no matter how weird, no matter how some of the decisions he makes, on game days are, he's winning the majority of the games there. And it's pretty impressive to me.
We're going to play a couple clips here from Mark Richt coming up. So, Matt, when you've got those, let me know. Because one of the things Les Miles did talk about was scheduling.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, the Florida Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know what the answer is there. I mean, it's going to be tough. I mean, if you're going to maintain the historic rivalries in the league, I don't know how you make that work. And it's never really been rotated on a fair basis for anybody. And it seems like it's always the most inopportune time, especially if it's your team, where it's like, okay, well, our team stinks this year, so we don't really care that we have to play at Alabama. That's okay. But next year, it'd be nice to have them at home if you feel like you got a little better team. It just doesn't seem like it ever works out well. LSU, in spite of all that, maintains, like you said, a pretty good record of success. So did the commissioner address that at all? Was that ever talked about? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess Mike talked about a few things. But
no, he did. I actually wrote about it today. So it's in our paper today. It's really a difficult thing. They don't have an answer because I think it's pretty clear that there is an unfairness about it, because when you look at the opponents that LSU has to play from the East, they got to play Florida and Georgia, and they were like 14-2 last year in the conference. And then you look on the flip side, Alabama, they play Kentucky and Tennessee, and they were 1-15. So you know, what, whether it's planned or not, or meant to happen or not, there is some unfairness, and I think that it does really kind of play out in who may or may not win the championship, you know, every year. You got to look at that schedule. Georgia was blessed last year, too. They didn't have to play, you know, the difficult teams from the West. So it's something that the conference is really trying to figure out. Flav has said, you know, they're going to stick with the 6-1-1 for now, and they're trying to come up with plans and ideas and really continue the discussion about what to do long term. But right now, they don't have a solution.
Mark Richt also talking yesterday to the media about scheduling, and of course they open at Clemson. They are at least they've got a pretty decent out of conference schedule. Appalachian State is a perennial power in FCS. They're moving, of course, into the Sun Belt Conference. They end their season at Georgia Tech. I mean, I would say it's probably a better than average non conference schedule for them, especially opening at Clemson. He was talking about scheduling as well.
Right, yeah. playing Clemson and South Carolina back to back, two teams that could very easily be in the top 10. Preseason. Of course, a few weeks later we play LSU as well, so we really have a tough grind of a schedule to begin with. But I think our players are going to be excited about it. I know our coaches are. Obviously, preseason camp will be built around playing that type of schedule to start out. We may start our work on Clemson and South Carolina a little bit sooner than maybe we have some other opponents in the past, so it's going to be big. We're looking forward to it.
There is no Texas A&M. There is no Alabama. They do have South Carolina and LSU. They're both at home. They're road games in conference play, guys, at Auburn, at Tennessee, and at Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. They play Florida on a neutral field. They go to Kentucky. I mean, they go to Missouri. They get Kentucky and Missouri at home, rather. So, I mean, they've got an awfully good schedule this year. I mean, if you're going to pick somebody based on that, and we do look at that pretty heavily when we're considering preseason picks, you got to like Georgia.
Yeah, I do. But you know what the key is, and he said it there in that clip, I think, is they've got to be ready to go right away because they're going to be challenged right out of the gate. So how do they handle, you know, those first couple weeks and, you know, the opener? And I mean, it's going to be very, very intriguing because, you know, it does lighten up, I think, a little bit as the season goes on for them. But they can't afford, you know, a loss early on, you know, whether it's South Carolina, whatever it is. That second, South Carolina, the second game of the year, I don't have the schedule in front of me. Is that when they play South Carolina?
Yeah, it is. And the interesting thing is, as I'm looking through their schedule, South Carolina has a very similar setup other than the fact they have to go to Georgia. But they get Vanderbilt at home, Kentucky at home. Their road games are at Arkansas, at Tennessee, and at Missouri. The only downside of that is they're back-to-back-to-back weeks. But they get Mississippi State at home, Florida at home. And the interesting thing is, while Georgia opens with Clemson, South Carolina finishes with Clemson.
Yeah, they both play.
Right. Very similar. But so Georgia schedules Clemson, South Carolina, non-conference, and then LSU. Is that correct?
Georgia's?
Yeah.
They're three big games. You've got Florida with a cocktail party in Jacksonville. You've got Clemson, and you've got LSU and South Carolina. So it's a four-game schedule, in essence, for Georgia.
Right.
I always liked Steve Spurrier's line about
you're assuming Georgia Tech is not a threat?
I think we can put that one up.
Okay.
ACC. And, you know, it's while a rivalry game.
Is that Georgia Tech?
Exactly. They're in Atlanta, which I always like Steve Spurrier's line about playing Georgia early in the year. We like to play them early in the year because they usually have four or five guys still on suspension. That was a Spurrier from a couple of years ago.
I like that. That's good.
Speaking of Spurrier, have you guys seen the picture of Spurrier apparently in Arby's that was on Jadeveon Clowney's Instagram account? If you haven't seen that photo, you got to go find it. It's fantastic.
I did see the photo. It said, I'm fascinated by this picture of Steve Spurrier in a fast food restaurant. I didn't know which one it was, but it always feels like an Arby's night. I wonder what he got there. Is he like a beef and cheese guy, or you think he went off the board and went like chicken salad sandwich?
I don't know, but it looks tremendous. Well, he's got his shades on, his tie's undone for media days. It looks awesome. It looks like it should be like a 2 a.m. photo, but I think it's actually, you know, in the afternoon. So,
Buddy always said on Seinfeld, feels like an Arby's night.
But you look at those three teams, Georgia, South Carolina, and Florida in the East, and with the exception of Clemson and Florida, they all play each other. They all play a kind of a common opponent. All three of them have basically the same four-game schedule, minus Clemson, obviously, for Florida. But, you know, that the East will be decided in about two or three football games, and the rest is just filler.
Yeah, I think that's true. And, you know, those are the three that everybody's looking at. They all had fantastic years last year. They all have a lot of optimism coming back into this season. I agree, you know, with you guys that Georgia's the favorite, and I think that they were out there, you know, as the favorite after media days. But South Carolina – isn't far behind. I'll be really interested to see what that team looks like this year, because I know they feel like they've got everything they need to make a run at the national title. I mean, Spurrier sounded very, very confident at SC Media Days. He feels very good about this team. And we'll see how they perform. But, yeah, you're right. You know, they need to win that game early on against Georgia. I mean, you need to get out there. When the schedule is three or four games, basically, you got to get out there and take advantage of every single opportunity you got, and that's an early one. So how are they going to respond? That's what's going to be very key for a team like Georgia or South Carolina.
You get some really good – you get interesting games early in the season, because really the team that wins that game is in the driver's seat. And if you lose it, you're in big trouble. And on a much lesser scale, as a team trying to fight for A, respect, and B, an opportunity to go to a decent bowl, Vanderbilt and Ole Miss open against each other in the first game of the year, and somebody's season is going to be established. And, I mean, Vanderbilt's a team that a lot of people think can win nine games again this year with their schedule. They've got a pretty favorable schedule as well. They do go to South Carolina, but they get Georgia at home. And who knows? I mean, maybe Georgia slips there. Maybe Georgia, you know, maybe Ole Miss gets somebody they're not supposed to get. So those are two teams that are good enough at this point with enough back from a returning standpoint to get somebody, especially Ole Miss. I mean, Ole Miss has 19 starters back.
It would not shock me to see Ole Miss finish inside this top two or three in the West. To see them jump up this year.
I hate to say it, but I can't disagree. Plus, they had a great recruiting class, and I don't know how quickly those kids will contribute. But, Robbie, good stuff. Certainly a lot more to delve into here. And, again, Media Day coming up at Arkansas in a couple of weeks. But I'm sure we'll catch up with again.
How much fun is Hoover, Robbie? I mean, you know, you're out there and outside of Birmingham. You got any kind of Chili's or TGI Fridays?
Apparently they got an Arby's there.
It really does. I mean, when you look at other places inside the South where you could go for SEC Media Days, It's pretty much Birmingham. I mean, there's not a lot to do in Hoover, Alabama.
They could put it in Nashville.
No, you know, the best part about it is that you got people you haven't seen in a long time from, you know, other newspapers, other, you know, radio stations, whatever it may be. So it's a great place to catch up with people that you know when you're done with your story. So that's what we certainly got to do. You know, go eat a bite, go have a couple beers. It's very nice, very nice.
I had beer at Arby's. That's cool.
Yeah, at Harvey's. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, sure. Robbie, good stuff. Thank you, my man. I appreciate the time.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
You bet. It's Robbie Nicewander of the Arkansas News Bureau, just back from Hoover, Alabama, where all the cool kids go.